I'm going to talk about statistical zero knowledge algorithms for any for NP for any one-way functions, and this is a joint work with Min Nguyen and Celia Bahan, my both my colleagues at Harvard. It's okay.
Microphone.
You guys can hear me? So this is my the slide of the talk states a theorem. So I'm going to prove statistical zero knowledge arguments for NP for any one-way functions. That's the main theorem. So why do we want to prove things for one-way functions in cryptography? Turns out that one-way functions are the minimal assumptions that we need that we use in cryptography, and one-way functions can give us a very meaningful object like pseudorandom generator, pseudorandom functions, commutative schemes, computational zero knowledge proofs for all of NP, digital signatures. And the fact that one-way functions are minimal is captured by the result that almost all cryptographic tasks would imply one-way functions, although we still do not know how to prove whether one-way functions actually exist. And so these are, in the language of Impalaiseko, this is what we call mini-crypt, but it turns out there are some cryptographic primitives like public key encryption and collision resistant hash, which we do not know how to prove from one-way functions. And in fact, we know that there's a black box separation between these one-way functions and these primitives. Now I'm going to add one more item to the list, the statistical zero knowledge arguments for all of NP, where statistical zero knowledge means the zero knowledge condition is statistical, where the verifier will not learn anything no matter how powerful he is on the yes instances. And arguments means the soundness condition is computational. That means on the no instances, only a computationally unbounded prover will not be able to fool the verifier. So let's look at this our result in historical context. Turns out that statistical zero knowledge arguments were constructed for all of NP by Basak Chom and Chipu under specific number theoretic assumptions like discrete log in the 80s, 86 in particular. And it was later shown by Nao, Ostrowski, and Wittgenstein Young from one-way permutations, and it was posed as an open problem whether we can get it assuming just one-way functions without any structure. So it has been left open for more than 10 years, and we just know that one-way functions is actually the minimal complex assumption for this problem. And therefore, our work can be viewed as we resolve the complexity of statistical zero knowledge arguments for all of NP. So as Salil mentioned, there are different notions of, so zero knowledge has three conditions. One is the zero knowledge condition, that means the verifier learns nothing on the yes instances when x is in L. And the soundness condition says that even a cheating prover cannot convince a verifier of false statements when x is not in L. And obviously the completeness, that means an honest prover and an honest verifier will accept things in the language. Of course, the most interesting parts are the zero knowledge and soundness conditions, which comes in two flavors. First, the zero knowledge can be statistical. That means even an unbounded verifier who invests as much time as one cannot learn more than whether the fact the statement is true or false. And computational zero knowledge just captures that only a computationally bounded verifier cannot learn additional knowledge. And soundness, we say that the soundness is statistical, meaning that proof, all cheating prover cannot convince a verifier of false statements. And when you say it's an argument system, when only computationally bounded verifiers cannot fool the verifier. And this argument was formulated by the work of Basak Chong and Chipu in getting statistical zero knowledge arguments for all of NP. Now, when we have both of these conditions to be statistical, then in fact, that obviously the best we can get statistical zero knowledge proofs, right? But it turns out that we probably cannot hope for statistical zero knowledge proofs for all of NP because AM inside CoAM, only languages AM inside CoAM have statistical zero knowledge proof. And as Salil mentioned, we can think of this as NP inside CoAMP. So we do not believe that NP complete problems have statistical zero knowledge proof. So we can hope to get zero knowledge proof for zero knowledge protocols for all of NP. We can perhaps hope to relax one of the conditions, say the zero knowledge condition to be computational. And in fact, the theorem of the 80s says that the result of work in the 80s showed that we can actually achieve this for just assuming one-way functions. So if one-way functions exist, all problems in NP have computational zero knowledge proof. Now we ask a similar question, but when we relax the soundness condition and make the zero knowledge condition statistical. And you know, this is our result, and we get one-way functions, zero knowledge arguments for all. So how do we do so? I want to just first state the standard paradigm of how we get zero knowledge for all NP, and in fact, our result will build on this standard paradigm. So first, we will show that we will somehow show that one-way functions will imply commitment scheme, and from this commitment scheme, we will use the Golightly-Kali-Rigelson protocol to get zero knowledge for all of NP. I will describe this protocol in a second. But first of all, what are commitment schemes? Commitment scheme has two properties. We want it to be hiding. First, it has two phases. The first commit phase and the second reveal phase. In the first phase, the sender will send a commitment to the receiver. And then in the reveal stage, the sender will reveal the committed bit B and the key K. So physical analog of commitment scheme, you can think of as a lockbox. So to commit to a message, the sender will send a lockbox to the receiver. And to reveal the message, the sender will provide the key to open the lockbox for the receiver. And the key properties that we need from commitment scheme is the hiding property. That means commitments to 0 and 1 are indistinguishable because think of the message in the lockbox cannot be seen. And the binding property, once you put the message in the lockbox, you cannot change the message anymore. So I'm going to describe to you how we get computational zero knowledge proofs from standard computational hiding and sensing binding commitment schemes, which by the work of Hill and Nao, we can get from one-way functions. So we know graph tree coloring is anti-complete. So what do we do? Given a coloring of the graph, the prover will randomly permute the coloring and then commit to the coloring. So we think of the commitments as being locked boxes where the verifier cannot see anything in the commitment. Or at least the commitment is indistinguishable to the verifier. The verifier will pick a random edge, and the prover will send keys asking the verifier to open one edge, for example, 1 and 4. And then the verifier checks that the colors are different, and it will accept that the colors are different. So the completeness is E to C. Now the soundness comes from the fact that if the graph is not tree colorable, no matter what kind of colors the prover put in these lock boxes, there'll be a property of 1 over the number of edges where the verifier will catch the prover, the cheating prover. Because the fact is that if he puts different, if the graph is not tree colorable, there'll be one edge where there'll be the same colors. And furthermore, if the commitments are binding, and it's crucially relies on the binding property of the commitments, the prover is not able to decommit to different values. So what we see now is that the binding property of the commitment gives the soundness property of the zero knowledge protocol. And it's, sorry, the soundness of the zero knowledge protocol. And the zero knowledge property of the protocol comes from the fact that these commitments are hiding. And at the end, all the verifier sees are two distinct different colors. So the hiding property of the commitment gives the zero knowledge property of our protocol. So binding gives a soundness, hiding gives us zero knowledge. And so it's natural to see that when we have computation hiding, we get computational zero knowledge, and when we have statistically binding commitments, we get a statistically sound protocol, which means a proof. So to get statistical zero knowledge arguments, it's natural to construct commitment schemes with a reverse properties, that's a statistically hiding commitment schemes, but only computationally binding. Can we do so? In fact, we do not construct, as Salim hinted, we do not construct standard binding commitments. So this remains an open problem. But before telling you what we do, let me survey the complexity of the previous works in constructing statistical zero knowledge proofs for NP based on different complexity assumptions. So the first book of Basak, Chom, and Chukwu concentrated on constructed statistical zero knowledge arguments based on specific number theoretic assumptions. Then it was later generalized to cloth-ring permutation and to collision-resistant hash. So notice that all these works require some kind of collision resistantness, and it's quite natural because if you think about it, the computational binding part of the commitments somehow talks about collision resistance. And in a remarkable work of now of Trotsky, because I'm young, they show that actually, you know, this intuition is false, that you do not need collision resistance and you can just base it on one-way permutation. And for a long period of time, one-way permutation seems to be the best assumption known to get statistical zero knowledge arguments for NP. And it took like, you know, 10 years, more than 10 years before it was improved upon by Hattner et al. To just assume regularity of the one-way function. And all these all construct statistical zero knowledge arguments from, they first construct statistical hiding commitments and then go to the standard paradigm to construct statistical zero knowledge arguments. And of course, the minimal assumption of all is one-way functions. And we naturally we want to kind of get one-way functions to this, and then we get SDK arguments naturally. But instead, because, as I've hinted, we cannot go through this route, or we do not know how to go through this route, we construct static hiding commitments, but one with a weaker binding property, which I'll explain in the next slide, what we call one out of two binding property. And it turns out that this commitments which have the weaker binding property suffices to construct statistical zero knowledge arguments. Any questions so far?
Is there a black box separation of one-way permutations and collision resistant hash functions?
Yes.
I think Simon has a black box separation between one-way function and collision resistant hash. Is it for one-way permutation? Oh, one-way permutation. Okay. Thanks. So what are one of this fuzzy one out of two binding commitments? So these are commitments that proceed in two phases. We call that the standard commitments has just one phase commit reveal. But now we have two phases. So the first phase, the sender will commit to a message and then it will reveal to the message. So I'll commit to say my private key. And then I'll reveal. Sorry, I'll commit to my public key, and then I'll reveal my public key. And then the second stage, I will commit to something else. I can commit to my secret key, and then I'll reveal my secret key. So the commitment, the message committed between these two phases can be different. To commit to my social security number in the first phase, and commit to my house address in the second phase. But what is key is that the first phase must proceed first, before the second phase, so it must be sequential. And the fact that the sender can also have internal state, can transfer internal states between the two phases. So what we want is that this commitment is hiding in both phases, so both phases, before the reveal stage, the receiver does not know what the committed message is. But it is only binding in at least one phase. And in fact, the phase which is binding can be determined dynamically by the sender. So a cheating sender can decide, okay, maybe I want to commit to a message in the first phase, and then later if the receiver asks me to reveal, I could decide, maybe I'll break it. But once I break it and the receiver forces me to go to the second phase, I will be binding the second phase. Or I can commit to a message in the first phase, and then the receiver asks me to reveal it, I can reveal it truthfully, and then when I go to the second stage, I can do anything I want. So yeah, at least one stage, the sender must be binding. Yes.
I'm not sure whether this question is too premature. Maybe you'll answer later. But in the first phase, you say you commit to B and then you review B. What do you then mean by statistically hiding in both phases? Because in a way, at the end of the first phase, you
That's what I'm saying. That the commitment of the first phase is hiding before you reveal it, and the commitment of the second phase is hiding before you reveal it.
So for with respect to whatever you're committing in that phase.
Yes,
so
exactly. So if I commit to my social security number in my first phase, before I reveal my social security number, it is hiding. Then I reveal it, okay, it's no more hiding anymore. Then I commit to my house address, it is hiding. Then I reveal it, that it's no longer hiding.
So you're also committing to different things in some sense.
Right, exactly. More questions? So why does this suffice to construct zero-knowledge protocols, zero-knowledge arguments specifically? So I'm going to give you the intuitive idea, and it's a protocol by Min and Salil. So the idea is that I just want to mention, in their work, they use these one or two binding commitments in an instant dependent sense to construct efficient prover zero-knowledge protocols for all of NP. And here, we are not talking about instant dependent commitments because we are assuming one-way functions, but essentially we use a very similar protocol to theirs, in fact, the same one. So, look at this. So, now that we have these two-phase commitments, we are going to run the GMW protocol twice in two phases. We're going to commit to the colorings, verify the query and age, and going to reveal the colors of the nodes. And now we're going to commit to a new set of colorings with new random coins, you know, new permutations and so forth, the verified queries and age, and I reveal the color of the nodes. Why is this zero knowledge? Intuitively, this is zero knowledge because the commitments in both phases are hiding. And we call it revealing the color of the nodes here, you know, is what is done in a zero knowledge protocol, so it doesn't leak knowledge, right? Because I'm revealing just one edge, not the whole graph. And this protocol is sound because the verifier needs to accept in both phases for the verifier to accept. So if the prover cheats in one phase, he'll be binding the second phase, and the verifier will catch the prover in the second phase. And let's just try, if the prover is honest in the first phase, and the verifier will catch the prover when the graph is not tree callable, for example.
Just to make sure I understand, do we have to do both the commitments in the two phases first before the revealing happens, or you finish the phase one completely before you do the commitment of phase two?
We finish the phase one. So the question was that, do we reveal phase one before doing phase two? And yes, we reveal phase one, we complete phase one, then we go to phase two. And it's very important we do so, because to do phase two, we need to complete phase one. That's one of the properties of our one or two binding commitments. But it's okay because we just, maybe if I understand your question correctly, is that we committed to many colorings, right? We reveal only some of the colorings, in fact, like two colorings, right? So how can you commit to more colorings now? Is that a question?
No, that's different, completely different permutation, right? In phase two.
Right.
Yes.
So there's some salty here. I'm just giving the high level intuition, right? This salty, you see, is that, you know, we reveal just two nodes, whereas the rest of the nodes we keep hidden. Whereas now we want to commit to many more colorings, and to get around this idea is that you commit to multiple commitments at the same time. And okay, this is definitely a very high level picture. I hope conveys the intuition. So now we know that statistically hiding in one or two binding commitments, hopefully I've shown you the intuition of why it suffices to get statistical zero-knowledge argument. The main work in this paper is to construct them for one-way function.
So sorry, just the question you mentioned. So
So you commit to many edges, each of them is a separate instance of the one out of two, and so, because you are committing to many edges and they ask you to open just one of them, and in the second stage again they ask you to open just one of them, you're still guaranteed that at least in one of the times it was still binding.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Even though you were committing to many instances at once.
Right. But yeah, exactly. So there's one assault piece to that.
Yeah, that's what you mentioned, but
right.
it's
in some sense, because we can the prover can decide, you know, in some of the commitments I break the first one, in some of the commitments I break the second one.
Right.
And actually we can handle that too. I don't want to get into that.
Okay, but it doesn't follow immediately from the definition, it's something or it does. You can handle that for any one out of two commitments?
So the commitment, one of the commitment that I define is just where I commit to a single message, right?
Mm-hmm.
But here, to get the graph tree coloring protocol, we commit to many nodes, not just one node.
And you don't just do it by repetition of your regular commitment? You do something more complex?
You mean repetition?
The protocol is more complex than the picture you put up.
So just in the syntax of one of the two commitment scheme, the verifier, is he required to keep state between the first commitment or second? It just runs two independent verification algorithms. So the syntax of the verifier, should he really keep state, that really link, I mean, that's related to task project, should he really know that the first one linked to the second one, or he just independently does it?
So he needs to keep state, yes. So in particular, the revelation of the first phase, so let me just quickly go back to the statement. So the revelation of the first phase, right, will be carried on to the second phase. So the verifier needs to know how the sender revealed in the first phase.
So
and this is important because if the sender cheats in the first phase by revealing a non-binding commitment, then the second phase will be binding.
Yeah, I guess another question of that is that there are so many commitments, how do you decide what to link? So the same is more complicated.
The idea is, the high level idea is what I presented. The details are more complicated. So this is the main, just to recap, the main goal of our talk now is to construct these commitments from one-way functions. But before we do so, I'm going to recap the work of Novi from construct standard commitments from one-way permutation, and then to see the extension by Hartnett and all to regular one-way functions. And because our work will build on these two works, that's why I'm recapping these two works. So how did Novi achieve statistically hiding standard binding commitments from one-way permutation? So given a one-way permutation act, the sender will choose a random x, and then will compute y, which is f of x. They will run what I'll call interactive hashing protocol, what they call interactive hashing protocol. I'll describe it in the next slide. That takes the input y and outputs two strings y0 and y1. And to reveal, all it does is to give this y and give this x. So what is the property of the interactive hashing that we want? We want, first of all, correctness that y is either y0 or y1. And here we can think of y0 as a commitment to 0 and y1 as a commitment to 1. So for me to reveal to 0, I will just give you the inverse of y0. So I give an x0 such that f of x0 equals y0. For me to reveal to 1, I'll give you an inverse of y1, any inverse of y1. So to achieve a statistical hiding commitment, we want the fact that our staff cannot, any cheating receiver, but when interacting with the receiver in the sender in the interactive hashing, cannot tell whether y is y0 or y1, when y is chosen at random. So why does this give us statistical hiding commitments? In this case, if we have this property, because f is a permutation, so when x is chosen at random, y become, when x is uniform, y is uniform too. for the property of a permutation. And if the integrity hashing has this binding property where S star can intuitively control only one of the outputs of Y0 and Y1, so it outputs both Y0 and Y1, right? And if a tuning sender can only control one of the string and the other string is random, then it is binding by the property that the function is one way. Because if, say, if the sender wants to commit to 0, it controls Y0, and Y1 becomes random. So to decommit to 1, for example, to break the commitment, we need to find an inverse image of a random Y, which we know is hard by the property of a one-way function. So how do they construct interactive hashing? So typically think of Y chosen as uniform in the space, or Y as an input to the interactive hashing protocol. And what the receiver will do is to choose a pairwise independent hash and ask the sender, where is your Y? Is it on this side or is it on that side? It's in particular, when H applies to Y, it will give you a value of 0 or 1. So I'm dividing up in the space into 2 each time, and I repeat this process. For n minus 1 times, so I take a space of 2 to the power n, I cut it up n to the power n minus 1 times, and what I'm left is just 2 points. So y prime, for example, which I'll denote as y0 and y1. So we can just think of the one that has the lexicography smaller order to be y0 and the one that's bigger to be y1. So let's look at the properties that we want to have, as I mentioned before. So the correctness is trivial. Hiding, why the cheating receiver cannot tell whether y is y0 or y1. So if y is chosen at random, then the sender's response will be the same for y and y prime because they are both in the same segment, right? So the cheating receiver, even an unbounded cheating receiver cannot tell whether y is y0 or y1, so that's why we get statistical hiding. And, yes, Anna? Oh, good point. And that's why Novi first needed permutation, because when X is random, then the output is random too. And this, we have to do quite a bit of modifications to handle just one-way functions. And when we call now, as I mentioned earlier, if all I have as a cheating sender is to focus on Y, intuitively because of the hash functions are pairwise independent, Y prime will be a random string. So we formalize this notion of what we mean by control in the paper, but think of this as the cheating sender can only control one input, one output YB, and the other output is totally random. Now, so what did Heitner et al. Observe when they have regular one-way functions? So we call that the binding property of this commitment scheme doesn't require permutation. As Anna pointed out, it is a hiding property of this commitment scheme that requires F to be a permutation. So now, if you do not have a permutation but a regular one-way function, the Y space is no longer random when you choose to exit random. The output space is one for the one-way function. So I'm just grouping it in terms of pre-image, where all the X and dotted region maps to the same Y. But what we observe is that if we know what, so Heitner et al. Assumes that you can approximate the pre-image size, or you know the pre-image size, you know T, for example, here. So if we know that the pre-image size is of 2 to the power T, between to the approximate 2 to the power T, then we know that the Y space, if you choose X at random, has mean entropy approximate n minus t. In fact, it's a flat distribution. So this is the definition of mean entropy, that each element of Y occurs with probability approximately 2 to the power negative k. to power negative n minus t. Now, how do we get a uniform distribution from this? We'll just apply an extractor on parameter n minus t. And on the z space now z is uniform on this space. So now we can apply, no v on the z space. So now instead of directly applying no v on y, which we know is not uniform, we apply no v on the z space. We apply integral hashing on the z space, and then up to z0 and z1, and then we show this. Now the hiding property is what we wanted, right? Because the z space is close to uniform, so when we input z to the integral hashing, we get a hiding commitment. Now the binding is a little more tricky. Now assume that there are some instances in the z-space which are easy to invert. Okay, I mean, in the real case, these instances can be moving around depending on which adversary we're talking about. But let's say now that there's just some instances for all adversaries, these instances are the easy ones, and the ones here are the hard ones. So I'm going to claim that if this fraction is epsilon, so you have, remember the z-space is n minus t, so you can invert an epsilon times 2 to the power n minus t strings in the z space. And if each of them have a pre-image of size approximate to the t, what we're going to do, what we show, is that we're inverting epsilon fraction in the x space. And so therefore epsilon must be negligible, because otherwise you break the one-wayness of the function. So the set of instances which are easily inverted in the z space is negligible. And when we do no v, the binding property of no v says that the sender can only control one of the z's, and the other z is random. So with high probability, with 1 minus negligible probability, the other z prime is going to be out of the strings that are easy to invert. So the sender cannot open the z prime, and the sender is bounded.
Who chooses the c to the extractor? As a receiver, or? Who chooses the C to the extractor?
The sender. But it doesn't really. So I'm just assuming now. I'm pulling the seat of the extractor down into the details.
Okay.
But it turns out that you can. It works out. Obviously, we have a seat extractor. But this crucially relies on the fact that we know t, right? We know the pre-image, or we know how to approximate the pre-image. But what happens if we have a function? So now it's, I finished surveying the previous works, now we're going on to how we can use these ideas to build on from general one-way functions. What if we do not know t? What if we do not know how to approximate the pre-image size?
When you say regular one-way function, you don't mean regular, you mean the usual definition. When you put regular one-way functions, you mean the usual definition.
Yes.
They're no longer regular.
And without knowing the pre-image size. So you
but
know that it's regular, but we don't know what the pre-image size is.
Oh, it's still regular.
Yeah. So suppose, for simplicity, S knows what the pre-image size is, like S knows what T is. But R does not know what T is. So we're going to follow the same protocol. So instead, because now the receiver does not know T, as I say, tell the receiver, well, this is the value of T, and trust me. So can we trust the sender? Can the receiver trust the sender in particular? So let's see. So let's say the actual value of T is T, and the sender sends a T prime. Okay, declares that the value of t is t prime. So notice that it's the same way we argue that in the binding property, that if we can invert epsilon fraction in z space, it corresponds to inverting now epsilon times 2 to the power t n minus t prime times 2 to the t because of the pre-image size. And if the receiver, if the sender over declares t, so it says that t prime gives a value of t prime that's much bigger than t, we're not going to able to invert epsilon fraction in X space. So we're not going to break the one-wayness of the function. So the binding property is not guaranteed if the sender over declares T. And intuitively, this, what happens to the sender over declares T, this space becomes so small that, you know, obviously the sender can invert almost all strings in this very small space. And you can't force the value of T to be underdeclared too, because otherwise you'll break the hiding property of it. So we want the value of T to be kind of very close to the right value, which Heine et al. Could get because they could approximate the pre-image size. But now we do not know how to approximate the pre-image size. Say we want the sender now to kind of prove to the receiver that the value of T is the correct value, so that the sender wouldn't be able to cheat in this way. So to do so, we use the second phase. So we say, you know, if you cheat me in the first phase, I'm going to catch you in the second phase. And this is how we use it. So the second phase essentially takes the value of, so instead of revealing x totally, we'll defer revealing x to the second phase. We're going to take an extractor on x, we run iterative hashing on it, and we have two outputs. Okay, don't worry about details, I'll show you why I'll do it this way. So now, just this is the one we had. So I just want to say that, you know, if t prime is underdeclared by the sender, then it's okay. The first phase is still binding. The only problem is when t prime is overdeclared by the sender. So when t prime is overdeclared by the sender, I'm going to say we're going to catch in the second phase in the following way. Because now if t prime is overdeclared, this space now is very big, right? Whereas the actual value of t is small, so the actual pre-image size is small. So when I write interactive hashing, recall that this space is the one that I can invert back to a set x, which will map to y. So when I run interactive hashing, the value of the other value y prime will be outside this set with high probability. And in fact, this is a statistical binding nature. So when the sender breaks the first phase, the second phase in fact is statistically binding. So I just want to say that this is what we have. What we mean by that is that if the second sender breaks the first phase, then the second phase is binding. Otherwise, the sender will be binding the first phase. Yes, you?
First you run with a minus the declared T, and then you run with the declared T, right? So second phase. So you first run with N minus T prime, and then you run with T prime. But how do you get hiding in the second phase?
Yeah. Oh, good question. I haven't done that. So when T prime is very close to T, I'll show that both phases are hiding.
Right.
So the hiding analysis goes that if T prime is declared to the same value of T, then the way I set up the parameters is Y will have, the Y space first will have mean entropy N minus T, and you extract the Z space, so you have uniform. So therefore you're hiding the first phase. And the W space now, when we do the second phase internet hashing, will be also uniform because this set now is very close to the size. Because now, formally, that given Y, the set of X such that X maps to Y has mean entropy T because it's about 2 to the T, and therefore we take an extractor of parameter T, we get a close to uniform distribution. And therefore the second phase is hiding.
So sorry, why is it hiding in the second phase?
Because given y, so in the first stage we reveal y but do not reveal x. Okay? Now given y, the number of x that maps to y has mean entropy T because they have 2 to the power of T, X as that maps to Y. So when I applied extractor to that, it will be uniform. So now what do we, now we're going to get to the final construction. And I think this is the second phase catching of the cheating sender is one of the crux point of why we really need this one out of two binding commitments and how we can avoid the knowing the pre-image size.
So when you say regular Bezier, you mean that every point has exactly the same pre-image size, roughly the same, but you just don't know what it is.
Yes, exactly. So now we can remove the regularity assumption with some additional analysis. So we call what we want to have, want to build is statically hiding one of two binding commitments, and then we can get statistical zero knowledge arguments. So first, I'm going to construct a commitment that is only weakly hiding. That means it's hiding with both phases are hiding with both the one over n, but at least one phase is binding. Then, in the paper, because we don't have time for this talk, we actually show how to boost this hiding property to a constant through a series of steps, and then we can do our final boost from a constant to statistical hiding. But let me just focus on this for the remaining time we have. So this is our protocol for the regular one-way function with unknown pre-image size. We're going to use the same protocol but a different analysis where we remove the regularity assumption. So how do we get the binding analysis? So we call this our binding analysis for the where we have regular one-way functions that when the prover under declares t prime, then it's binding for the first phase. But in fact, for regular one-way functions, we have pre-image sizes that are different. They are no longer the same, right? But what we can do is can partition the space of Z such that these Zs have pre-image size of less than 2 to the t prime. So these Zs have pre-image, very small pre-image size, which we will catch in the second phase. So we don't care about these Zs. What we care is the rest of the Zs which have big pre-image sizes. And we're going to say that if epsilon fraction of them are easy to invert, then we can invert our one-way function too. Because if epsilon fraction of these Zs with big image pre-image sizes are easy to invert, then because they have big pre-image sizes too, so therefore we can invert more than epsilon fraction in the X space. So in the first phase, we're going to say if we're going to bound the set of Zs to recap that have big pre-image space size that are easy to invert. And now if I declare things that are in a small pre-image size, then I'll catch in the second phase. Because things that are in a small pre-image size have a small pre-image, and when I map it to the W space, the second phase will be binding. Okay. And for the hiding analysis, we call that we really require this regularity because we had this space to have mean entropy n minus t, and we had this uniform and the W space uniform too. So for the hiding analysis, the regularity seems pretty important. But what we observe is what I call the egg and the egg diagram. So you look at the set of axes of the one-way function, so the set of inputs of the one-way function, and you divide them into, you partition them into their output map is. So this is all x and maps to the same output. So it turns out that if you look at the pre-image sizes of approximately to the t, there'll be one t such that it occupies at least 1 to the n fraction, because t can only go from 1 to n. So we observe that if the coins are from this set where the mean entropy of x now given y is greater than t, then the second phase is hiding. and if the coins are in the small pre-image size set, the second phase, the first phase is hiding because now the set, when you map to an output, when you map to f of x, the y space will have high mean entropy. But there's an overlap of the first phase hiding and second phase hiding in this 1 over n fraction. So that's why we only have 1 over n hiding. So with probably 1 over n, our coin forces will be in this desired set, and both phases will be hiding. So just to very briefly mention that we get this by amplifying the hiding property, by doubling the hiding property from delta to 2 delta, so 1 over n to 2 over n, etc. And we do this in log n steps. And in each combination, we actually combine constant number of protocols and combine them using internet hashing and analyze them using average case measures. Just to make a point here that if we had just standard binding commitments, we could have just XORed it and boost the hiding property. Because if one commitment is one of n hiding, then you take n squared commitments, for example, and with exponentially high probability, I mean, one minus exponentially small probability, you get at least one of the XORs to be hiding and therefore the whole commitment to be hiding. So with standard hiding binding properties, we can do it very easily, but here we had very much more complicated steps because we wanted to preserve the 1 out of 2 binding properties, which does not seem to be preserved under things like XOR. And here, for the final boosting step, we just combine polynomial number of schemes to finally boost up 1 minus negligible properties. So, great. What do we have? So we have constructed this 1 of 2, non-standard 1 of 2 binding commitments for one-way functions, and as I mentioned, it's very useful to construct standard hiding commitments, standard binding commitments for one-way functions, because you know our commitments seem to be only applicable when a prover does a commitment. When a verifier does the commitments, we do not seem to be able to guarantee kind of zero knowledge of soundness properties. And it has many applications beyond zero knowledge. Standard commitments. And for the fact that you know if we have standard hiding commitments, we can get much simpler analysis and much simpler protocols too. One wide open problem, as Alan mentioned, is the round complexity of protocol. We are hugely polynomial. And even for one-way permutations, statistical zero knowledge arguments are not known how to be sub-polynomial. But if you assume, say, collision is a hash, then you can get it too. Constant number of rounds. And obviously to simplify the construction, as you see, our page is 70 pages long, so anyone wants to make it 10 pages? Fantastic.
Just reduce the font.
Thank you.